It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. If you've ever been in the market for a used car, what criteria do you consider? Do you look at the type of vehicle it is? Sedan, SUV, truck, coupe? Of course, you look at the year and the mileage, but to what end? Maybe you want a newer car with fancy technology. Some people prefer an older vehicle that's maybe easier to repair. Well, there's a growing trend to actually import cars into the U.S. in an effort to drive something that was previously not available to us stateside. There is, however, one big catch when importing a car. It has to be at least 25 years old. You may have started to see some of these vehicles on the road, and there's an easy way to tell if a car is imported. Its steering wheel will usually be on the wrong side of the car. Or I guess if you want to be a little less American-centric, a little more globally minded, you might say it's on the right side of the vehicle. Joining us now to walk through this growing trend is Zach Pradel, a car reviewing YouTuber based in Oswego, Illinois. His channel is called Shooting Cars. I am a subscriber. Zach, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk about it.
Also joining us is Cody Clark and Mason Gillette, who are co-own Nomad Auto Imports in Flint, Michigan, which is an auto dealer that specializes in selling imported cars. Cody, Mason, welcome to the show to you as well.
Thank you for having us here. Thanks for the opportunity. We're excited.
And listeners, you can join us by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. Have you seen a right-hand drive car in the States while out driving? And maybe if you have any interest in importing a car, what would you like to know about it? 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Zach, I'm going to begin with you. What are some of the reasons somebody would want to import a 25-year-old car in the first place?
Well, I really break it up into two groups. There's the enthusiast group, of course, that wants something unique. A lot of cars in Japan we never got here. Right off the top of my head, the Nissan Skyline is a very sought-after car that we just never got. The other reason would be for practicality. A lot of farms use small vehicles, small little trucks that were easily found in Japan, but maybe weren't so easy to find here. A lot of them have a higher gear transmission, so you could actually drive them on the road instead of just on the farm. And postal workers, they want something with air conditioning and, you know, a little bit nicer vehicle, but since they're right-hand drive, it makes their job a lot easier.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah, you mean rural people who don't get the official postal truck, I guess, if you're on a rural delivery route. Okay, let's start with the nostalgia for these cars. You mentioned the Nissan Skyline. Where does that come from, considering these vehicles were never sold in America in the first place?
I think there's a lot of pop culture that came out of Japan in the late 80s, early 90s, like the Initial D TV show or the Gran Turismo video games as well. We grew up seeing and driving these cars in the games and watching them on TV, but we never had access to any of them. And so now that, you know, my generation is becoming adults and adults with money, we want to sort of live out that nostalgia. And so the Skylines, the right-hand drive RX-7s, the A86s have really become something that we can not only afford, but we would want to have in our home. And the 25-year rule actually allows us to do that now.
All right, Cody and Mason, I'm going to bring you into the conversation now. Talk about your business. How does this work? How does auto importing work?
We own a dealership in Japan, and then we own a dealership here in the States. And so what we do is we have two different ways of importing vehicles. So one is we bring the cars into our showroom for vehicles that we believe we can sell here in the States and that people would want or particular interest of vehicles. The other way is we have customers who reach out to us and they go, hey, this is my dream car. It has to be red, has to be whatever. And we go and search for that car and bring it in. So we have two separate sides of the business model, if that makes sense.
How did you get into this line of work?
Mason here, I started the business, because I wanted to import a car, and, the more and more I talked to other importers and the more and more I talked into people in the business, I saw that there was a huge negative review. And I mean, there's multiple Facebook groups of people who are saying that they got, you know, ran down by an importer and their money is gone and stuff like that. So I saw the need for it. And I also saw that the risk, you know, I wanted to bring in a car myself and the risk was so high to, you know, send somebody all the money and hope that you get it. And so I kind of just started there. I used to live in Asia growing up. And so it would just kind of made sense to me.
So that's interesting when you say the risk, and talk more about that. I guess if there are scams in this space, you don't know what you're going to get necessarily.
Oh my. Yeah. There is a lot of scams out there. So you have multiple different like channels. There's other importers, and I don't want to speak badly of other importers, so I'm not going to list any names, but there's other importers. And if you look at the reviews, you look at their clientele and people who have bought a car from them, you'll see that a lot of they have problems with rust. They have problems with buying the car sight unseen and the mechanical failures and stuff like that. Running all the way into like, you know, they bought a car that they said wasn't in an accident, and they look underneath and the frame is bent.
Problem.
Yeah. So there's a lot of problems like that, but then also there's the other end of the spectrum where let's say it's not a United States importer. It's an exporter out of Japan. So there's actually websites you can go to like, carfromjapan.com, and stuff like that, where about a quarter to a third of the listings on there are fake listings. The car doesn't really exist in real life. They want you to send and wire your money over to Asia, and they never message you back, and they never contact you ever again. There's multiple ways into this, and we've had clients come to us and go, hey, I tried to buy this car from Cars from Japan. I ran into this exact problem, and now I'm out of my money. Is there anything I can do? And I'm like, unfortunately, no. You know, we can try to help you get a car when you're ready, but you know, there's nothing I can do to help you get your money back from Asia. That's kind of the fear of the business, right? So that's where we come in, and we're trying to supply that to the Americans and supply that to people. So our big thing is we try to focus on rust-free cars and stuff like that, but also we always want our clients to see our cars. And I talked about this with Zach when he came to visit us the first time. Is like, I almost always tell a client, like, we should do a video call. You know, if you're buying out of state, you're buying sight unseen, we need to do a video call. I want to do a full walkthrough with you. I want to show you every defect that I'm aware of on the car, and then we can go from there in terms of price and everything like that.
Cody, I want to bring you into the conversation. What are the sort of things you're looking at? We heard the thing about rust and the bent frame. What are some other signs? What are your sort of key points of evaluation?
Well, and that depends on you know, what we see on like the auction grade sheet for the car, for example. If we're looking at a car at auction to pick out, to bring over here in the first place, we're looking for evidence on that sheet, which most of the time is accurate, whether or not it's had an accident or partial repaint or stuff like that. But we're trying to aim for things with lower mileages that are another thing that's important to that is that most vehicles in Japan have either a verified or unverified mileage. So that's something that can be looked at to kind of judge the character of a car, whether or not it's been, you know, used a lot in its life truthfully, or if it's maybe had the gauge cluster odometer swapped out. You know, it may give you a clue of some of its history, whether or not it's a true to form vehicle, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah, interesting. All right, Zach, let me come back to you. And let me actually remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're talking about the idea of importing cars into the U.S., vehicles that we maybe never had a chance to drive here because they were just not sold in the U.S. market. There is something called the 25-year rule. Basically, a car has to be at least 25 years old to be imported. And there is a rise in interest in some of these vehicles, owing in part, as we heard, to pop culture. A lot of people who grew up with culture out of Japan in the 90s, maybe they played the Gran Turismo video games or watched the Fast and Furious movies and saw some of these vehicles. Now you have a chance to own one in the States. We're talking about this with Cody Clark and Mason Gillett, who co-own Nomad Auto Imports in Flint, Michigan. And Zach Pradel, who is a YouTuber in Oswego, Illinois. He has a channel called Shooting Cars. 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation today. 800-222-9455. Zach, talk about why these cars were not allowed to be sold in some cases in the U.S. in the first place.
There's plenty of reasons why a car wouldn't have been sold. A lot of it does have to do with the emissions standards. So here in the United States, we have very strict emissions laws as compared to the rest of the world, which I think is a benefit. You know, we have cleaner air and things like that. But there were a lot of cars that just didn't comply with that. And it costs a lot of money for a manufacturer to then get a car to comply to our standards. So we miss out on a vehicle called the Suzuki Jimny, which I know the Nomad guys are very familiar with. But they still make it today, but it just doesn't pass our emission standards. And so we miss out on this really, really awesome tiny little off-roader that is as capable as a Jeep, but, you know, will almost fit in your pocket. So that has a lot to do with it. A lot of it is growing markets as well. A lot of these cars from Japan are smaller than the vehicles that we have here. And we've always had an American idea of, you know, the larger the car, the better the car. And so, you know, importing a tiny little shoebox automobile wouldn't have had the widest appeal, especially back in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, and you had you did a video on this where you talked about the K trucks. Talk about the K trucks and what that means.
So K, it's spelled K E I, not to be mixed up with K cars from the 80s with Lee Iacocca and Chrysler. It's a classification of car where there was basically a certain size requirement and engine displacement requirement in Japan that if you were below that threshold, you could get cheaper parking, you would get cheaper insurance, it was cheaper to register it. And these cars ended up being really, really tiny. And so we don't get them here because of our safety standards, but they're really great cars. I mean, it's all a person really needs. It's usually two, sometimes four seats. A little tiny 660cc engine will take you to the store. You know, you can go to Jewel Osco, run your errands in it, and not take up too much space while doing so. But again, they weren't really offered here, mostly because of engine size and safety requirements.
I mean, are these things basically motorcycles with a car around them?
Basically, yeah, that's a very simple way of putting it. Yeah, and sometimes I've seen motorcycles with larger engines than some of these are available to have. The 660cc limit is about 0.6 liters of displacement. So I think the smallest engine currently offered here in the States is like a 1.2 liter or 1.3 in the Chevy Trax. And so it's almost half that size.
Half that size. But the K trucks in particular, you talked about their use in agriculture. Why would somebody want that as opposed to like a Gator or some of the other things you can get at the home goods store?
So there's many benefits to the K trucks. First of all, like I said, with the gearing, a lot of them are either 4-speed or 5-speed manuals, or they're very rare automatic, but they're mostly manuals. And so you can actually drive them at highway speeds, 60, 70 miles an hour. It might be a little terrifying, but they will actually do it. Where Gators are never able to be registered on the street, the Gators are more often than not. I actually specced out, I believe, a Polaris. I forget what the Polaris version is, but it was going to run me 16, 17 grand for a vehicle that I couldn't put on the street, that didn't have a roof, that was made out of plastic. These K trucks are metal. They're solid, actual engines made by car manufacturers. And I know the Nomad guys can speak more about this, that now Michigan doesn't allow them to be registered on the street. But there's still a lot of states that do. I know Maine has flipped, and they no longer allow them on the streets. And I believe Michigan has flipped. I can't speak on the other states. But at least here in Illinois, for the time being, we can still register them, drive them around. And, you know, you can import them for under 10 grand, where a Gator of a similar build, you know, with windows and, you know, a radio might run you $18,000.
Oh, wow. And maybe we should just sort of describe for people what these trucks look like, these K trucks in particular. It's like the engine is under the seats. It's often a two-seater. That's one of those flat front, the windshield and the front of the vehicle is all flat. And then there's a bed, a pickup truck bed in the back, which I understand can be almost as large as, you know, a standard American pickup truck bed. Cody or Mason, talk about, and we need to take a break in a couple of minutes here, but talk about that. What happened in Michigan that changed the law up there, that these things, I guess, were street legal and now they no longer are?
Yeah, so the state of Michigan has always been kind of against vehicles that can't easily go road speeds. And so one of their big concerns is if you were to, let's say, slam on the brakes in a K truck going like 55 miles an hour or something like that, They are known for lifting the rear axle off the ground. So they kind of, we call it an endo, which is it's the same term that they use on motorcycles when you like go over the front handlebars.
Oh, right? I was thinking like on my bicycle. Yeah, that's why you never squeeze the left hand brake of the bicycle before you come to. You always start with the right. Yeah, okay.
Right. So K trucks can do that at like 55 miles an hour if they lock up the front brakes. Like, let's say an emergency situation, you're just going to skid forward and lift your rear tires off the ground. So that's one of their concerns. The other thing is Michigan has banned, and they're very strictly banned, side-by-sides from road use. And so when they did that, they were like, well, we should do everything that's similar. And that's kind of where a lot of it came from.
Okay, we are going to take a break. We will continue this conversation when we come back. Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We are talking about the growing trend of importing cars into the U.S. These are vehicles that were, in most cases, not available here, at least in the configurations that we are talking about. Many of them are right-hand drive. Some of them have smaller engines, smaller form factors. They have to be at least 25 years old to be able to bring them into the United States, even if they were manufactured here and maybe designated for a Japanese market, which is the case with some of these vehicles. We're talking about all this with Zach Pradel, who is a YouTuber based in Oswego, Illinois. He has a channel called Shooting Cars, where he reviews cars and talks about a lot of older vehicles as well. Cody Clark and Mason Gillett are also with us. They co-own Nomad Auto Imports in Flint, Michigan, which is a dealer that specializes in selling imported cars. If you want to join our conversation, the number to do that is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st show. Stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about importing vehicles into the U.S. They are at least 25 years old. This is something that is gaining interest among people. It's often these vehicles have right-hand drive. They were designated for overseas markets. Often the Japanese market are popular to bring them back into the U.S. Some of these vehicles were made here, but only sold over there. We're talking about this with Cody Clark and Mason Gillett, who co-own Nomad Auto Imports in Flint, Michigan, which is a dealer that specializes in imported vehicles, and Zach Pradel, who is a car reviewing YouTuber based in Oswego, Illinois. His channel is called Shooting Cars. 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. Zach, talk about people who maybe want to import a Japanese version of a car that did sell in the U.S. Why would somebody want that?
There's two reasons for that. First of all is, it's just cool. I mean, come on. I mean, what are we doing? It's really cool to drive on the other side of the car. It's a very cool feeling. You go to the drive-thru and, you know, the worker is like, what's happening right now? You get a million questions at the gas station why you're hopping out of the wrong side of the car. It's very, very fun, and it puts a smile on my face every single time. But the second reason would be parts availability, and I think that's a big reason as well. Because a lot of the cars in Japan, like we were talking about, like the Skylines particularly, they were never sold here. And so those have engines. They're called RB engines. We didn't get them here in really anything. And so, you know, if you need an engine part, you can't go down to O'Reilly's or AutoZone and just pick up, you know, some parts for a Skyline that was only sold halfway around the world. And so there's a lot of vehicles that did have that sort of carryover. Toyota, they didn't have Lexus in the 90s in Japan. So they rebranded a lot of the Lexuses as Toyotas, like the Toyota Celsior or Celsor was the Lexus LS400 that we got here. So most engine parts and most components from the USDM vehicle will carry over and fit the Japanese vehicle. So it's a way that you can own a Japanese car and still have that fun right-hand drive experience while not necessarily breaking the bank or having the car be down for months off of a possible solenoid that has to come from Japan.
USDM being U.S. designated market as opposed to JDM, Japanese
yes.
designated market. I understand there was even a Chevy Cavalier that basically got a Toyota badge put on it.
Yes. So Chevy and Toyota worked together a lot throughout the 80s and 90s. And so in some markets, they rebadged the Cavalier as a Toyota product, which is very backwards to what we would, you know, currently assume from the business. But yeah, there's some really crazy ones. There's some really fun names too. The Subaru Domingo. There's a whole lot to get into, but yeah, it's really nice being able to sort of swap those parts and buying a car from Japan that's right-hand drive, that's cool, but might have an engine or transmission that we got here. So then parts serviceability will be a lot easier than the truly JDM cars.
Yeah. Cody or Mason, what are some of the things that people need to know if they are interested in getting into this? What are some of the, you know, challenges maybe of ownership of one of these vehicles?
Well, I'll open that up with, as Zach's been talking about, the whole right side of the car driving aspect of it, right? If you're coming from driving a left-hand side car the entirety of your driving career, then, you know, that's a polarizing effect to overcome, you know, right off the bat. You have to deal with the fact that you don't want to try and base yourself off of, let's say, the yellow line in the middle of the road anymore. You really want to be hugging the shoulder instead, and teaching yourself to do that. You know, if you're a good driver in the first place, that's something that'll take a short amount of time to get used to, but you know, it depends on the person, obviously, how long it takes you to get over that.
And are these manual transmission cars? Are you shifting with the left hand in a lot of cases?
I was going to get to that next. So the cars are kind of half and half, right? They got as many manuals as they did automatics. So, yeah, with a manual car, right, the important part is that most of your controls are still in the same place. The shifter is still in the center of the car, but yes, you're shifting with your left hand instead. But thankfully, your pedals are still in the same locations, clutch on the left, brake in the middle, gas on the right. The other big change you deal with switching to a right-side drive car is, in most cases, not all, your turn signal stalk, which is normally on your left of the steering wheel, switches to the right-hand side. But if you just kind of keep it in mind that it's on the outboard side of the car, you know, you won't mix that up. But I guarantee the first couple times you will, you'll flip on the wipers instead because the stalks flip side to side.
No doubt. Yeah. I've never had the chance to drive a right-hand drive car, but I have driven in the U.S. Virgin Islands where they have left-hand drive cars, but with the sort of the road lanes switch. So you drive on the left side of the road, which was, you're right, a very interesting experience when you're used to looking
yes.
at that double yellow line. Zach, any tips for adapting to driving on the wrong side of the car, so to speak?
I wish there was a camera in here because I was shaking my head with the wipers and turn signals. The first several right-hand drive cars I would drive, I would reach for the turn signal and chuck the wipers on a sunny day. I think Cody said it really well. You know, the spacing thing is the biggest difference, and that in making right-hand turns on red lights, something that we take for granted every day. You just make a right on red when it's safe. When you're in a right-hand drive car, you have to look back all the way through the car. And so if you have big blind spots, right-hand turns and getting into the left turn lane with oncoming traffic can be really, really tricky because our roads just weren't set up for it.
And Cody and Mason, what about on the mechanical side of owning one of these vehicles? Can it be a challenge if you're not living in Flint, say? I'm sure you have customers from outside of Michigan who are looking to buy.
Yeah, it depends on the vehicle. So like Zach was talking about earlier, some of the cars have crossover, right? Like the Celsior has crossover to LS400 parts, which, you know, you could take it to a regular mechanic and the mechanic would be like, oh, I've worked on an LS400 this before. Almost everything's the exact same. But yeah, you get into the more quirky cars like a Suzuki Cappuccino, and it's a little different. So usually what we do is we recommend when a client buys something, if they ever have a problem in the future, or if they run into a, you know, they can't find parts or they need help with finding a mechanic, We usually try to help them inside their local community, whether that's through reach out to other mechanics inside the area and explaining what the vehicle is to them, or supplying parts websites and supplying form help, where, you know, if somebody has a full write-up online how to do a fuel pump in one, we supply that to the customer too. So we try to help people pass the actual sale point of the vehicle, because we know it is kind of difficult, depending on the car, to track down the parts or to get the labor done on the vehicle, depending on what kind of vehicle you own.
Suzuki Cappuccino, that may be my new favorite car name. Zach, have you ever driven one of these?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I love the Cappuccino. They're little turbo three cylinders, I want to say. K cars. And yeah, so I heard someone might be trying to put a Chevy V8 into one. Maybe that would spruce up the reliability, but we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, I wonder who that could possibly be.
Let me ask, you've mentioned that some of the concerns about these vehicles with the American market had to do with safety and emissions. I guess, Cody or Mason, like, are people taking on a personal risk here? Are these vehicles, I mean, obviously they're not, you know, necessarily as safety minded as a 2024, you know, domestic vehicle would be, or even a foreign vehicle. But what about as compared with vehicles from the time? Is this a riskier drive?
I'd say that's definitely accurate when we're talking about the K vehicles that Zach mentioned before. You know, they're a lot smaller. They're typically no more than 10 and a half feet long and 4.5 feet wide. Think about the footprint of that. That's smaller than a Mazda Miata, which is already a small car by a fair margin. And it's kind of a barrier to entry to the whole thing. So yeah, you got to keep an open mind about the fact that you need to be more careful on the road, not only if the car is slower to get out of its own way, but that, yeah, you're avoiding much heavier, larger, safer vehicles than what you're driving. So yeah, that's something to keep in mind.
And what about the emissions, Zach? Do you ever hear about that? I mean, is this like, are people worried about bringing in polluting vehicles? Or is, I guess if you're an enthusiast, maybe that's not top of mind for you.
It's such a small volume. Like, obviously not your entire neighborhood is going to have these 25-year-old JDM cars. So the emission standards were just different. We have very, very strict rules here, and most of that precedent is set by California. And so they didn't have no emissions. It was just, we are so strict here, and they have to pass these rigorous tests that these cars didn't go through. So are you bringing in this huge pollutant, black smoke, blowing car? No, it was just different regulations, different standards, and some of the cars didn't meet. Some cars did meet, they just still weren't brought in here for other reasons, like market reasons. You know, market research will tell them to keep a car in their home market or not, and things like that.
So Cody or Mason, tell what is it like when somebody actually picks up one of these vehicles, right? This is maybe something they've been thinking about since they were a teenager. You know, they've gone through the work, they've been online, maybe they got scammed, as you said, happened in some cases. They come to you, they're getting this car in person for the first time. Just take us through that moment.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, what we're trying to do here is our business is selling experience. We're selling the car, but we're kind of selling the fun along with it as well, because the people who are going to come to us in the first place, they kind of already know what they're looking at. Like you said, they've already done some research. They already have a general idea about what they're looking at. We're just trying to take them all the way to making the purchase and making it realistic for themselves, and that they're buying a good quality car in the first place. And so, you know, the excitement is already palpable from their end, that they're, you know, they're excited to be here, and we want to make that happen.
Zach,
Oh, sorry. In part with that, like, one of our favorite moments of running this business in general is seeing the smile on somebody's face when they buy something or when they drive it on the first test drive. Because there's so many weird quirks and so many things about driving a right-hand drive car, like what Zach said, like, it's just, there's an experience with it, right? And every time you go to McDonald's, it makes you happy because you see, like, the people who work there are just like, oh my God, it was that right-hand drive. And so you get that part of it, and it puts a smile on people's face. And the best way I can explain that is, like, we had Zach out here for a day earlier this year, and we put him in a rare old Fiat Lancia. And his face when he came back from a test drive on that was just an amazing feeling for us, because you get to see how happy and giddy somebody gets from driving a car like that. So, you know, that's part of it to us, right?
Yeah, watching his video on it was absolutely entertaining, just to see his excitement about the whole thing.
Yeah, Zach, tell us about that.
Oh, I mean, where do I begin with that car, personally? it is such a cool and unique experience, and I personally have a 1931 Ford Model A at home, and it's a very similar experience where it turns, you know, just going to the store, just going to the doctor even. I took my 31 Ford to the doctor not too long ago. It makes every experience so much cooler because people stop you. They say, oh, like, you know, what is that? That's so cool. It's so unique. And driving right-hand drive, the number one question, I think, and Cody and Mason can back me up on this, is, oh, is that car from Britain? Everyone just always assumes that British cars are the only right-hand drive cars. And so it's fun. You get to have that conversation, letting people sit in the car and, like, play with the pedals on the wrong side of the car, or giving people even rides in the car because they're sitting where the driver would normally sit. They feel like they should be hitting the brakes and hitting the gas, and they feel like they should have a steering wheel. It's just such a cool and unique experience. And the cars are most of the time relatively affordable. There's always going to be outliers, but it's not hard to get into the seat of something from Japan that is right-hand drive. It takes a lot of looking and a lot of paperwork, but there's not a whole big barrier to entry, and that's a really big appeal as well.
Zach Pradel is a YouTuber. His channel is Shooting Cars. Cody Clark and Mason Gillette are the co-founders of Nomad Auto Imports. Thanks so much for being with us and sharing your business and your enthusiasm with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
Thank you. Been excited to be here.
Coming up tomorrow on the program, we are going to be talking about the upcoming Jewish holiday of Passover, again, at a time of war. We had a conversation several weeks ago with people of the Muslim faith about Ramadan at a time of war. We'll be having a different perspective on what has been happening in Israel and Gaza tomorrow on the 21st Show. Our program is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Damian Contreras. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. You can visit our website, 21stshow.org, to find past programs, ways to contact us, our email address, our voicemail line. They're all there on the web at 21stshow.org. You can also find links to our podcast or just look us up on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen. Thank you to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey, and we will talk with you again tomorrow.